This is The Adam Ritz Show, a public affairs talk show touching on community, health, foundations, and more. The Adam Ritz Show is underwritten by Vibonomics, an audio out-of-home advertising marketplace and audio experience company. Info at Vibonomics.com. And now, from the Vibonomics studios, please welcome your public affairs radio host, Adam Ritz.
Hello, everybody. My name is Adam Ritz, and I host this little radio show, and we talk about public affairs issues and content from coast to coast, and I do it with Jay Baker, who's on the phone with me right now. Hi, Jay. How are you?
Hey, I am doing great, Adam, and yes, public affairs is our gig. Public affairs, you and I know from being longtime broadcasters, is an important way for the broadcasting community to share positive knowledge with their listeners. And you and I have decided, why take those old stodgy public affairs shows of the 60s where you couldn't even stay awake and turn it on its ear and give you important, valuable information, but do it in a more fun and accommodating way.
You couldn't have said it better. That was perfect. You would never hear a story like this one on an old stuffy public affairs radio show.
Oh no.
We're gonna start with the story of Tom Cruise and the distinction he was just awarded this week. Tom, are you familiar with a gentleman named Tom Cruise?
Well, I have heard of him. I prefer to call him Top Gun Maverick when I see him.
Well, if you you know, you bring up Maverick, and that's part of the story. One of the best films of 2023, I believe, was the year that came out. Grossed over $1 billion. And something else that film did is it increased military what do you call it? Enrollment?
Or recruitment.
Recruitment. Yeah. There you go. Thank you for that.
Yeah. No. You're absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. And that's why the military has backed his films, because it does nothing but good for our U.S. Fighting force.
So Tom Cruise was awarded the top U.S. Navy honor this week. It was the Navy Distinguished Public Service Award, and he received it from the United States Secretary of the Navy for his work in not just Maverick, but the original Top Gun film, other patriotic films, including Born on the 4th of July. So he has done enough in the cinematic universe to actually affect military enrollment. So that's pretty cool.
See, that's so cool. Plus, he brought back beach volleyball. Remember the first Top Gun?
He should get credited with a beach volleyball accommodation as well. I believe you're right.
Yeah. Well, no, I think he's terrific. The films are fun to watch. And, you know, it's certainly a case, too, where the sequel was equally positive for recruitment and also entertaining. So, like you said, the movie studios are happy and our U.S. government is happy. So it's a win-win for Mr. Tom Cruise.
So I'm certain there are, you know, high school-aged men and women that will join the Navy, and they'll walk into the recruitment office and say, I would like to be a Navy fighter pilot like Tom Cruise Maverick, because I saw it in a movie. But I don't know if they can walk in to any office and say, I would like to be a member of the Mission Impossible team. Because
no.
That is still a U.S. government agency, but it's underground and secret. So you don't really see those recruitment offices in a strip mall. I don't know where you go if you want to join that team.
I like it that you said it with, you know, such straightforward nature. It's part of our government, but it's secret. I mean, you know, that you're playing right into the filmmakers wanting everyone to believe that, yeah, you could sign up for the IMF. And then, like you said, wouldn't that be great? It's in a strip mall.
The IMF Recruitment Center.
Impossible Mission Foundation, you know, or whatever they're calling it.
I think we may have just accidentally solved the biggest mystery in the country right now. I think Tom Cruise is manning the drones that are flying over the East Coast right now.
He might be.
It's all part of his, it could be movie research for a new Top Gun film.
We never know. That's pretty funny. Right. But yes, way to go, Tom Cruise. Hey, here's a great note as we head into this holiday season. This is the time of the year when we reflect with friends and family. You know, we think in terms of Thanksgiving of giving thanks, but we're also grateful that we've made it through another year. If you had money to spend on gifts, that just shows, I think, some thought process that, you know, that the American economy is returning. And we are certainly very lucky, I think, to be Americans. The World Giving Index ranks the U.S. as the sixth most charitable nation in the world.
I absolutely believe it. I'm proud of it. Would hope we'd be a little higher, but six is not too shabby.
Yeah, the index found Americans gave almost $560 billion to charity last year.
Where's Canada and, on that list?
You know, I don't have Canada on the list. I'm sure that they rank up there. Our friends to the north, or as I prefer to call them, America's hat, they they are a generous people as well. But yeah, so no, I don't actually have the list. I just have that we gave $560 billion, and this is America. Last year, and it came direct, most of it came directly from individuals.
Yeah.
So that's an impressive figure.
That's a big number. That is $560 billion given by American citizens in charitable donations. Well done, America. Cheers to you.
Absolutely. And also people gave their time with more than 60 million people volunteering more than 4 billion hours in 2023.
Very good. Keep it rolling.
The most charitable state in the union following these metrics is Wyoming.
Wow.
So for some reason, Wyoming sort of leads the league in charitable giving.
This must be a per capita situations. So since there's only seven people that live in Wyoming, five of them must give their time and energy to charities.
I think that you are correct. By the way, the World Giving Index said, if you want to get more engaged in your community and you'd like to be part of this giving process, if you have the time or the money, here are some ways that you can do that. One of them is to donate blood.
Yes, blood shortage continues across the country. That's a great idea.
Absolutely. You could also donate to a local nonprofit. So we've talked about there's a number of ways to look up legitimate nonprofit organizations in your community. Think about donating to them. Also, paying it forward, still a very popular idea about you're in line at a place where you buy coffee or you're buying some lunch. Think about paying for the people directly behind you as a gift.
Now, what if the guy behind you in the drive-thru at Taco Bell is in a Bentley?
Oh. Well,
does that still count as a charitable donation?
I think it does. You know, paying it forward is based on the thought behind the idea, Adam. So I'm going to guess Bentley guy is excited because he just got free Taco Bell. Though I will tell you the number of Bentleys currently in Taco Bell drive-thrus is at or near zero as of this broadcast.
but I think you're right. Bentley guy would be excited to get a free Nacho Bel Grande. Who wouldn't?
Bentley guy was already ordering off the budget menu at the Bell.
That's afford the Bentley.
But you got him a free bean burrito, and he is a happy man.
All right, yeah. But seriously, pay it forward. You know, you can look in your rearview mirror, and if the car behind you needs some excessive work, you could probably make a good educated guess that that person could probably have a better day if they got a free $15 to $20 order taken care of them. So
yeah, absolutely. And that's what I've always kind of liked about Pay It Forward, because with the way most lines work, you know, that order has usually already been tabulated. So it's really an easy thing to just pay it. And then the people get an unexpected bonus that, hey, there still are charitable people in the world. One of the ways you can do it, too, is distribute essential items to homeless individuals. You know, we've had many communities that put together like backpacks for kids or put together care packages for the needy during the holidays, all very positive things. Mm-hmm. You can also help animals and help your neighbors. You know, you've talked about on this show a lot of times, if you have a good, strong back and you're in good health, why not shovel your neighbor's walkway or driveway, his sidewalk, during the next snow that you get? He'll probably appreciate it.
Without question. If you're in your 30s and 40s and you're, you know, healthy, so to speak, and you do have a neighbor in their 70s or higher, and you're out shoveling your own driveway, it would take hardly any more effort just to shovel a pathway from the front door to the mailbox. You know, if you don't have time to shovel the entire driveway, definitely at minimum, shovel the pathway. That would help so much for your elderly neighbor to be able to just go down and get their mail.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anything you can do to help. And we're not urging you to go out and, you know, endanger your health, because we know it can obviously be cold. And we've talked about that. Certainly the snow shoveling season has increased the number of people that have reported to the emergency room. But if you're healthy, it's something nice you can do. I know if somebody came by and shoveled my walks for me, I would certainly make sure that they got a bean burrito or better at my local Taco Bell.
For sure. Yeah.
I would, after they helped me, I would pay it forward for them.
Well, then, you know, I may come over to your house later today and just sweep off the front porch, see if I can get a meal out of it.
That'd be nice, man. I got to tell you, I mean, somebody needs to come over and sweep it. And it's sure not going to be me. I'm a radio guy. Come on. These hands are made for holding a mic, not pushing a broom.
Not
come
tools.
On. This was an amusing article. I think you'll find it helpful, though, if you find yourself in this situation. A gentleman by the name of Grant Harold, who is a former royal butler to King Charles III,
well,
insists that the proper way to eat a hamburger is with a fork and knife, especially if you're in a formal setting. So let's say you're in a formal setting, and in the unlikely event they would serve a hamburger, you get out your fork and knife.
So beyond just a five-star restaurant.
Right.
Does that count as a formal setting? Because I know, well, five-star steakhouses have a, you know, they've got some $25 cheeseburger on the menu. Do you
absolutely
want me to use a fork and knife when I eat that?
I think what they're thinking of is in terms of, and you know, and this happens so often in our lives. Let's say a member of the royal family is throwing a picnic at their estate and they invite you. I think that's kind of what they're referring to, a potential a formal environment. And I guess, you know, any kind of president, like the president of a company or the president of a university, you might find yourself at an event where they have a cheeseburger. And yes, you'll say to yourself, thank goodness I heard this on the Adam Rich Show in time to not look like a rube.
Well, just to be safe, Jay, since I'm not going to know exactly when to implement this strategy, I'm just going to go ahead and use a knife and fork every single time I eat a cheeseburger for the rest of my life.
Well, I think you're doing the right thing, because Mr. Harold said that during his time at Buckingham Palace, it was common practice among the royals to watch them eating most items with a knife and fork. Now, we emphasize this etiquette applies at royal and high-end events where dining protocols are more structured. And, you know, you and I've always talked about dining protocols. I mean, I got in trouble one time at a buffet for pulling my chair up.
I was hungry. Because it's true.
It's true. Yeah, it's I'm not proud of it, but you know, I was not following dining protocols. However, we will add this etiquette expert Rosalinda Randall, who is a little more down to earth, pointed out this rule doesn't always apply. Foods like pizza, tacos, burgers are generally eaten with our hands during casual occasions, adding that cutlery might be practical at a fine dining establishment or during a job interview. So think about that. Let's say you're at a job interview and they serve you a hamburger.
That's now.
Then you might get the knife and fork out.
Now we're talking total confusion. Here's one for you, Jay. And I've always wondered about this one, but I've stuck to it because I figured, you know, sometimes if you're the only one that's doing it or the first one to do it and you do it with enough conviction, people don't think it's a problem. So I do it
right.
And do it proudly like I'm doing it correctly. But when I have sushi, I will pick up the piece of sushi with my fingers. I do not use chopsticks. And I do it because I could use I know how to use chopsticks. I could use chopsticks. But for me, the single slice of my spicy tuna roll is small enough and bite size enough that it just seems so inefficient to use a tool to pick it up and put it in my mouth rather than my fingers, because to me it is the definition of finger food.
You know, I have heard that sushi it's entirely up to you whether your comfort level is grab the piece of sushi, as you said, and steer it into your mouth, or to use chopsticks. That apparently it's kind of up to you, and that it's not incorrect to grab it and just go ahead and enjoy it.
Okay, this is great information for not only me, but the listening audience. So if you've been wondering whether or not you're a hillbilly for using your fingers to eat your sushi, is acceptable.
Well, and then you and I know one of the greatest phrases of all time, gas station sushi. We applaud the fast food and convenience food industry. However, your local high-test gas station might not be the best place to get high-quality sushi.
You are encouraged think mandated by state law to use only your fingers while eating gas station sushi.
And never get more than 20 minutes away from an emergency room is the other other guideline for that. But here I will give you the end all and be all if you're concerned about eating with cutlery or with your hands. Etiquette experts advise that guests should always follow their host's lead. It is polite to follow their lead no matter what, ensuring diners can navigate any occasion with ease. Mm-hmm. So if the person throwing the party is using a forklift to get their sushi to their mouth, you should too.
Yeah, absolutely. Follow their lead. That's a great rule to keep in mind.
Absolutely. This is kind of an interesting story. Unclaimed baggage can end up in a store depending on which local laws they follow, etc. But in Scottsboro, Alabama, there's a very unique store that sells items from luggage that was lost and never reunited with its owners.
That's kind of weird.
It is very weird. When I saw this, I thought, well, my goodness. But I'm telling you this because this might be something that would pique your curiosity, or maybe you could even find a bargain or two. Airlines typically try to match suitcases with passengers for 3 to 4 months before selling them. And at this particular store, the items are sorted, cleaned, and put up for sale.
How much for a toothbrush?
You know, it didn't really say here. Once again, we don't recommend the sorted and reused toothbrush. While you might save a little money, you might be in a situation that would require a visit to a dentist to take care of any possible cross-contamination. I'll leave it at that.
The toothbrush, you know, a new toothbrush doesn't set you back that much. That you'd have to buy one at the lost luggage store.
I'm just telling you, it's well worth the investment for a new toothbrush to keep everything clean and happy.
Now, how much would that hurt your ego if you walked into a store and you noticed that all of the clothing that was for sale was from your luggage that you had lost 6 months ago, and none of it was being bought because it's so ugly? No one wants your clothes.
You might be a little humbled. Yeah. But they opened this store in 1970. It's like Christmas every day. We never know what we will find, according to the store owner. They have a vast inventory ranging from clothing and electronics to rare treasures like a Rolex watch. Mm. They even came up with a suit of armor. Somehow somebody had a suit of armor in their baggage.
And their checked baggage, there was a suit of armor. Oh my gosh, that's what kind of vacation or trip are you taking?
Absolutely.
You've got that in your baggage.
Well, you might be going to one of those Madrigal fairs and you're taking it pretty seriously.
Well, yeah, you know, you're right. That's a Renaissance fair goer for sure.
But I thought that was interesting. The store, by the way, attracts over 1 million visitors annually. So if you ever are in the Scottsboro, Alabama area, you might want to check it out. People like to look for items. Believe it or not, somebody actually got a wedding dress there.
And
you feel bad because somebody was going to be wearing that at a wedding.
Well, maybe they purposefully lost that luggage because they knew they were going to call off their wedding.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah.
But I believe
they
purposely lost it. That somebody found a wedding dress in that mess.
Now, here's a cool story, Adam. If you're looking to buy a last-minute Christmas gift for somebody, there's a brand new book. Have you heard about this? The book is called There's Treasure Inside.
No.
It's from an author by the name of John Collins Black. He offers clues to treasure. He says that he's hidden all across the United States. John Collins Black is an entrepreneur who made a lot of money with the stock market and also the tech industry. And what he did was he hid 5 treasure chests around the country with a combined value of more than $2 million.
Oh, this is such a fantastic idea. And he's got the clues in the books that he sells. This is so fun.
He said this would be a great way to reconnect with his younger imagination and his love of fantasy. He uses his background. He had a background as well in the music business. So he uses poetry and writing to help people imagine where the treasure may be. He hopes that people will find it entertaining, even if you're not interested in searching for the treasure. But the treasure is out there, and you kind of admire him doing this because I think people would be fascinated by it.
Oh, without question. I've always thought it would be cool, similarly, to have a movie that kind of did the same thing. But I always thought there'd be too many people involved in editing the final version of the film that somebody would leak the secret and get the treasure before you even release the movie. But if he's the only one that knows where the treasure is, and he's the only one that wrote the book, outside of a final editor to just check his grammar, this can absolutely work It's a great idea for him. I mean, depending on the price of the book and how many you sell, this is a moneymaker for him. And then, you know, B, this is a moneymaker for the person reading the book. How many books do you read where you could get a $2 million treasure at the end of the book?
Oh, absolutely. And I did see the book on the Amazon bestsellers list long before I'd ever heard the story. But I find it fascinating that somebody took the time and effort to put this together. And yeah, and you hope everybody has fun and stays safe while doing this.
And I think we should put a disclaimer in here that this should not be your retirement plan. You should save money, get a job, have a career. Don't think, you know what, I'm just going to get that book and find that treasure. I'll be fine.
That's funny. Hey, this is a perhaps a non-related note, but it's exactly what we just talked about. The active number of people that are searching for this has been greatly reduced through the years. But one of the history books I read, it has to do with the silver mining district that's right on the Nevada-California border. And the greatest silver mine ever was discovered in that region. The gentleman that ran that mine, he would take the day's output of silver and cast it into a piece that could actually fit inside of a stagecoach. So the stagecoach had a special attachment. Think in terms of like the hitch that you would see on a trailer hitch on the back of a truck, and they would cast that day's worth of silver, and it would accommodate inside that hole. And the reason why they did that was then, even though the stagecoach now had this multi-million dollar piece of silver, it was in a protected area and they could keep an eye on it. Well, one of those stagecoaches unfortunately crashed on a mountain pass, and that particular piece of silver exited the stagecoach and down the ravine, never to be seen again.
Okay.
And it has prompted people off and on. This happened, I don't know, turn of the century. So it's been 125 plus years. It has prompted people off and on to go look for said silver. Most people have given up. But believe it or not, it's still out there. And with every treasure, eventually it'll get found, probably by accident.
Agreed. And do we know the value, the monetary value of this piece of silver?
I think the guesstimate at the time is, given today's silver prices and stuff, it might be worth between $8 and $9 million.
Yeah. I think we should
go
broadcast.
So that's about right.
Let's go broadcast live from there. And maybe by the end of the show, we'll find the silver.
You can either find the silver or buy a scratch-off ticket, whichever you think is more convenient.
Again, not a retirement plan. Certainly could supplement your retirement, but not the plan to have.
That's what
I've learned during this show today, Jay. The silver hunting, the scratch-off lottery ticket, the book, there's treasure inside. These are not guaranteed ways to make money to retire on. They're just for fun, and they might even cost you money in the long run.
Oh, absolutely. But it's fun to think about it. So, yeah. Hopefully, Adam, you will have a happy and safe holiday this holiday season. I think things are certainly looking up in our world, and we're looking forward to a very happy holiday and a prosperous, hard to believe, 2025 on the horizon.
That's right. We've got just one more show to do before the end of this year. So for 2024, thank you, Jay, for all of your efforts. We want to thank our listeners for tuning in and supporting the show and supporting the foundation, charity, and community public service works that we talk about and promote, whether it's a 5K in your area or working with the Humane Society. If we all give back, everybody can move ahead. So, Jay, thank you so much. Our listeners, you can find out more on our website, listen to previous episodes of these shows in podcast form. AdamRitzShow.com is the website.
The Adam Ritz Show is recorded live in studio at the Vibonomics Worldwide Headquarters. Learn more about the Vibonomics Audio Out-of-Home Marketplace at Vibonomics.com. For information on this broadcast, including past on-demand episodes, interview submissions, and syndication contacts, visit AdamRitzShow.com.